and good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora, and good morning, listeners. It's hard to believe, isn't it? It's the 4th of March. We're officially in autumn or something, and a big week coming up because it's International Women's Day on Monday the 8th. Did you know that, listeners? I hope you did, and I hope you're planning something special if you're a woman or if you are not. There you go. There's a challenge for you. This morning is our fourth part of a series of four. Obviously, it wouldn't be the fourth part if it wasn't a series of four, in response to feedback we've had from you and, of course, those challenging credit cards that require payment after Christmas. Some of us are still dealing with those. And, of course, the challenges of COVID and all things financial. And so we put together a series of four. If you've missed the first three, this is the fourth, but don't panic because they've all been podcast and they're on the Yarra Valley FM website for you to have a look at. And well, sorry, more accurately, to have a listen to. There you go. So in the studio today, I have the amazing Vicky Senior, who's the branch manager of the community bank here in Wirriallic. Hi, Vicky. How are you?
I'm good, Bruce. How are you?
Wonderful to see you again. Have you had a good week?
I certainly have. I don't think I've ever been called the amazing Vicky Senior.
There you go. And sitting right next to you, of course, is one of your team. Can we say the amazing Ingrid Wright? Ingrid, you've come back for a second week. There you go. You must have enjoyed it last week.
I did, yes. Good morning.
Wonderful, wonderful. And for those of you who have missed the first three programs, we've talked about the challenges of online banking and scams and frauds. We've talked about financial abuse and bullying. We've talked about financial hardship. And this week for our fourth and final program, we're going to be talking, well, we're going to talk about budgets and financial literacy and maybe just a little bit of tax thrown in there and a whole lot of other things. And should you take out a variable home loan or a fixed rate home loan? And what's a good thing to teach your kids about things financial? And should your young person have a credit card or not? And some of those, lots of questions for today. But to get you in the mood and to get us all thinking about money, my favourite, see if you can figure out who this is.
We'll be right back.
And thanks for joining us for Community Conversations here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1 on this Thursday, the 4th of March. And my special guests, Vicky and Ingrid, here in the studio, we're talking all things financial in this series of four programs through February and March. This is our final program, so we're going to wrap it all up today. And Vicky, no better place to start this morning than to be thinking about starting with kids. I mean, let's start with the little ones. What actually is good for us to teach our, let's start with children, young children. I mean, what should we be teaching them about things financial and things banking and stuff?
It's a really good question, Bruce, because it does start from a young age. And I'll talk a little bit about how I went into a school for older kids. But from young kids, my advice would be get them used to being accountable for their own money. So having a piggy saver account or a junior saver account, whatever your bank offers as a children's account, and getting them to pay their own money in. Get used to doing that. Counting their own money is always a good start as well. And, you know, the little kids that come into our bank, we definitely see them excited about the balance growing.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. And so recognising what the coins are and the difference between them is probably the very first thing, Vicky.
Absolutely. And that obviously happens at school as well. But as they get older, it makes it a little bit more exciting for them. And as we know, banking can be a little bit boring, Bruce.
So, it can.
If you can make it interesting, that's great.
Terrific. So let's imagine the kids have grown up a little bit. And now they're young people or they're further on in school, Vicky. What about, credit cards, debit cards? I mean, what should we be focusing on for, 14-year-olds or something?
Well, it's actually very topical for me, and it's interesting that you should bring it up, because just yesterday I went into a local school year 10 class and spoke with them about financial literacy. And one of the things that I've found over the years has been that a lot of older people, much older people, find later on when they need to know this information, don't have it and are too scared to ask the question. So my attitude was, you're never too young to learn. Even though at 15 you can't have a credit card until you're 18, I think having the information early is the best thing that we can do for our kids. So this particular presentation, we started out talking very similar to what we've done on this show: scams, fraud, what to look out for, to being tricked into putting your card details into the internet, etc. We then went on to talk about the difference between a debit card and a credit card. A debit card being that it's your own money that you're spending, and a credit card being that it's a facility that the bank have given you. So we talked about limits and how it's possible to go over those limits. And we also talked about the ancient method of writing checks. And not one kid in that class knew what a check was. So that
there you
was,
go.
It was interesting. we talked about the place for checks in a show a couple of weeks ago. But it was interesting to talk to kids about why it's important to have an opportunity to use a bank check, for example, to purchase something large rather than going into a branch and drawing out huge amounts of cash. So there are still a place for these things, Bruce.
And I've just learned something, Vicky, because I didn't realise you had to be 18 before you had a credit card. So what is that the same for a debit card, just out of interest?
It's not, Bruce, no. And I'll get Ingrid to talk a little bit about that in a second. But a credit card is a lending facility. So the second that the bank, whichever bank, is lending you some money or giving you a line of credit, such as a credit card or a personal loan or a home loan, you have to be over the age of 18 and you have to have a credit file.
Ah, so my 10-year-old could have a debit card, in theory?
Ingrid, over to you on that one.
There you go. You get all the good questions, Ingrid.
No, 10-year-old would not be able to. But our student kids counts, you have, the young kids, some of them doing school banking. You have some of them coming in, and as they grow, their needs change. They need possibly a cash card to pay for, travel or food when they're, out after school.
Or that piece of software they're saving up for or something like that.
Yeah, so a lot of banks will have a youth card, which is a debit card. It has a debit facility. You can use the credit facility to purchase things online, but it's restricted. So they can't purchase things like alcohol or cigarettes online or at shops. The card has the restrictions on them.
And I'm curious, without mentioning names, of course, but how do kids go generally with their banking, with their debit cards or their various cards? How do they? Do they mostly work out okay for them?
Yeah, it's really interesting to know, to see. We've had kids, look, I've been at the bank over 10 years now, and there has been kids that have been coming into the branch since they were toddlers with their little coin, counting their coin, and they've continued up going with the school banking.
Great.
And I served one girl the other day, she's about 14 now, and I opened up a new card for her, which was great. She knows the value of the money and the saving, and just because she learned it all at an early age. So it's really nice to see them grow and have that understanding.
Terrific. And along the way, learn responsibility, I guess, for money.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the value of it, and also the worth of it, how to earn it. You know, most of them are earning their pocket money with little jobs around the house. And then they can use that money to purchase the things that they want and not things that they need. So
there you go. Fantastic.
We've also found historically that the kids who do their banking from a young age, when they do turn 18, they do tend to be better keeping their accounts in order. So not having overdrawings on their accounts, making payments when they do take credit cards out. So it definitely does start early.
Let's, Ingrid, you've selected a song here for us. Dire Straits, Money for Nothing. I can't place this one, but it's got the right title, so let's have a listen.
Thank you. American, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Money for nothing.
And you're with Bruce Argyle here on Community Conversations, our regular Thursday morning program, and we're talking all things financial. We've just been talking about kids and finances and cards and things. And Vicky, just to wrap that up before we perhaps go on to some of us older ones, should young people who are over 18 have a credit card or not?
It's an interesting question, Bruce, and the answer is it depends on the 18-year-old, but it is a really good way to start when you're going into the lending avenue of life, if you like, because at least with a credit card, you can manage a small balance, you get used to making small repayments that are affordable, and you can clear a balance in full at any time as well, whereas with a loan note they work slightly differently. So if you're not sure and you want to help your young person out and get them on the road to lending, then I guess a credit card is a good place to start.
All right, well, let's roll on a few years and let's imagine we're now 25 years old. I've got a daughter of my own in that age group, and she's looking at the moment considering a home loan, her first home loan, and she's weighing up whether, you know, should she be locking it in as a fixed rate loan or a variable loan, and or should she keep renting for a little while and save a bit more and then buy, or, you know, and then how much can she lend, and, you know, all of that. So let's just have a quick conversation about home lending, Vicky. What's the starting point if we're thinking about it? Is it a decision on how much we can afford to start with and to repay and so on? Or what's the starting point?
Oh, goodness me, a quick conversation. This one could go on all day. There's so many questions. And I think that's something that the main message I get from young people or first home buyers coming in to see me are, there's so many decisions to make, Vicky. Where do we start? And I'll never give somebody advice in that way. So,
and we should point out that we're not wanting to do that today either.
Exactly right. It's all about your own personal preference. All I can do is tell you the benefits of doing one over the other, and obviously the downside to that as well. So
why don't we start with the fixed loan versus the variable? Just tell our listeners what the difference is between them, Vicky.
Good question. So fixing your loan basically means that you're locking in an interest rate for a certain amount of time. So be that 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. I think that you can even do 10 years with some banks. And the benefit to doing that is that your repayment is exactly the same every single fortnight or month or week or however often you pay your mortgage payments.
Which you can budget for, and we're going to be talking about budgeting next, so we'll come back to that.
Exactly. So some people prefer a fixed loan because they like to have a fixed payment. And also at the moment, whilst rates are at an all-time low, everybody's fixing, or lots of people are fixing their loans and really enjoying the benefits of that. I should say everybody's enjoying the benefits of it because it's keeping your payments lower. You know, I've spoken to a lot of elderly or older people who've told me that they paid mortgages at 16% in the 90s.
Yes, that's very scary. And I was one of those, believe it or not. There you go.
I wouldn't say you're elderly, bro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You've just passed the test, Vicky. So what about comparing a variable rate then? What's the difference?
Okay, well, a variable rate is exactly that. It changes each month. It may stay the same, but it can change depending on what the bank do. And, you know, sometimes variable rates are lower than the fixed rates, which is why some people like to stay variable. Sometimes they're higher. But what it does is give you the flexibility to be able to move your home loan to another bank. It gives you the flexibility to be able to sell your house without having to worry about paying break costs for breaking a fixed rate. And it also means that you can make a large lump sum of extra repayments on your loan without any issues there. So if you do come into a lot of money, Bruce, and you want to pile it onto your home loan, being on a variable rate, there's no restrictions there.
Right. Okay. So now the biggest challenge is how much do I need if I'm thinking about buying a property, perhaps for the first time? You know, do I keep saving, or how much do I need to save? What, do I have to have 5%, 10%, 20%, Vicky? I mean, and again, listeners, we're not about to give financial advice today. So, Vicky, just a general comment?
There are a number of rules to this, Bruce, depending on whether you've bought a house before and depending on whether or not you are buying a house to rent out or to live in yourself. But basically, I would say that if you have a 10% deposit, that's a good starting point. It's at least a point to go into your local bank and talk to your bank manager or your lender about where to go next. And they may say, okay, you need to save a little bit more for stamp duty, or you need to save a little bit more, or you've got enough to do what you need to do, and let's get the ball rolling.
Terrific. And I'm sure you, and certainly I, would be saying, go and talk to someone. Talk to someone in your bank and, you know, get a few figures that you can play around with and talk with your partner or whoever else is involved and go from there, Vicky.
That's exactly right, because the amount that we can lend you is based on the value of the property that you're purchasing, but also how much income you have coming into your house. And we talked about this in one of our other sessions about making sure that you budget for life-changing circumstances. What you can afford now, you may not be able to afford in 2 or 3 years' time. So it's really good to have a conversation with the bank and each other on worst case scenarios. And I think another main thing to mention there as well is that there are a lot of parents and grandparents out there who want to help young people get into the housing market and offer things like guarantors. It's not something that we'll talk about today because it's a very long and complex process. But
sure.
I just want to point out that as good as it is to offer to be a guarantor for somebody, it is also really good to see that they can make a saving themselves. So if you can save 10% of a house purchase, which I know isn't easy these days, but if you can, it's a really good starting point for showing that you do have the capability to make payments.
It's not an easy path, Vicky, because it's also, you know, looking around for the right property and in the current market, of course, it's very competitive, isn't it? And there are not enough properties out there. And as you say, the prices are sort of up and down and all over the place too. So lots of considerations and it's quite challenging.
It really is. And I feel very, very sorry for people trying to get into the housing market at the moment, because I think in this area, 500,000 gets you a house just about.
Yes.
You know, it's not a... and those sort of figures, you know, I'm sure that if you'd been told that 10 years ago, Bruce, you'd have been sweating.
Yes, you would. And I wish I'd sort of bought about 10 houses back then, Vicky, or something or other. But yes. Ingrid, just before we go to our next break, do you see young couples, young people and perhaps not so young people coming in daunted by the prospect of buying a house?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for them to come in and have a talk early on, when they're considering that they might be ready to purchase a house, you know, even if it's in the next 6 months, 12 months, you know, just so they have a game plan, they know what they need to save, how much they need to have, what their price range would be to purchase.
Yep.
It's a really useful tool. Your local branch and lender, a wealth of knowledge to help you in hitting those targets and what you need to do to have a lending.
And you're listening to Ingrid Wright here, who has 10 years experience in community banking, based right here in Wirralee. If you want to talk to Ingrid or Vicky or any of the team there, give them a call on 5961 5644. We're going to have a selection here of yours, Vicky. You better tell us a little bit about Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
All I know is that they're great and I love this song, Bruce.
There you go.
The tracks of my tears. like I'm having fun. Although she may be cute, she's just a substitute, because you're the permanent one. So take a good look at my face. Oh, you see my smile.
Here in the studio at Yarra Valley FM 99.1 with Vicky and Ingrid. We're talking all things financial, and we're about to talk about budgeting. And I'm wondering how many of you out there today have actually sat down and done a budget from scratch. Is it something that you do routinely? Is it something that you look at each year or review or something like that? I'm wondering about that. So where do we start? Ingrid, if you were doing a budget, I'm putting you on the spot here. Yep. I mean, where do you start? Do you get your Excel spreadsheet out, or do you get a piece of paper, or do you have a look at your how your bank account's looking, or where's the starting point?
I personally am a sucker for Excel spreadsheets. Love a good spreadsheet. So you know, basic, you know, you got to make sure your in is greater than your out, really. Yes.
That's a good start always, isn't it?
Yeah. So breaking down what, you know, your expenses, be them weekly, monthly, annually expenses, put them all in a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
You can then divide them all up into, you know, if you're paying something annually, break it down into weekly, how much you need to put aside each week to cover that annual cost.
Great.
Having separate accounts is useful as well. A lot of people have just their card account that they use for their normal expenses, and they have a separate account that they use just for what the big bills when they come in. Working out how much they need each week to put into that bills account so that when the big ones do come, they've got some put aside.
Terrific. All right. I like your approach there. So let's just do an imaginary budget on air here. Let's imagine a household budget of $1,000. Let's go $1,000 a week. So that'd be $52,000 a year. Just to keep it tidy and easy for on air. So, all right, we've got our Excel spreadsheet or our piece of paper in front of us, Ingrid. We would add any other income. There might be a little bit of interest here, or something we get from grandma or something like that she gives us for our birthday every year or something.
Yep. So important ones you'd need to make sure are covered every time is your payment of your car, house, loan, rates, and, you know, the necessities like your water, electricity, internet. Those things need to be covered straight off the bat.
So these are the things that we would call our fixed costs, our things that we don't have any choice in.
That's right.
So we have to pay our rent or our mortgage. We have to pay our internet if we want to be on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay our rates if we've got a house that we own. So, all right. So let's imagine for our listeners today, we're paying. Some of you will be horrified by this, and some of you will be not surprised at all. Let's say we're paying $400 a week for our rent or our mortgage. So there's our first $400. And let's go to your point now. Let's say we own our house and we've got annual rates of $2,400. So that's We'll make it 2,600. There we go. That's $50 a week. Then, if we go back to our weekly for our rates payment, so we'd put that into our budget line. We keep going with our car payments, and we divide it all down. And so each week we work out, and then hopefully we get to the end, Vicky, and we've got more ins than outs. But talk to us about these are the fixed costs, aren't we, that we've been talking about so far, but the area really that has some movement or some possibility for us to review and reconsider are what we call our variable choices, aren't they?
Absolutely, Bruce. And you've uncovered there one of the big mistakes that people make. And you know how you talked about your rates being a yearly cost, so $50 a week. What I found is that people put $50 a week into their budget, but then 3 months down the line, they've got all this extra money in their account, and they go and spend it, forgetting that at the end of the year they've got their rates to pay.
Yes, which comes all at once. Or mind you, some councils, and I think Yarra Ranges Council is one of those, you can elect to make a monthly payment.
Or a quarterly one, yeah, there are options there for you. But what we like to do is see everybody saving that money into a different account. So I call it a contingency account. And if you can save 20% of your income, so if you're earning $1,000 a week, you save your $200. That covers things like your rates, if your car expenses are, your fuel and your rego and your insurance. You also have to put in their maintenance. You know, what if at the end of the year something goes wrong? Having that money in a savings account isn't necessarily spare money. It could be there for that purpose. But it stops people from falling out of their budget, if you like.
And is it something, Vicky, that we ought to review as we go along after 3 months, 6 months, 12 months or whatever to see how we're tracking?
Another excellent point. You've done this before, haven't you? Yes, you do. I review my budget all the time, and I'm a little bit different to Ingrid. I absolutely despise Excel spreadsheets. If I can avoid using Excel, I do. I have old school diary with all my bills that I write in each fortnight. And another tip that I would have there is if you're not the best with money, set your payments so that they fall in line with your pay. So, for example, I've made my mortgage payment fortnightly, and it falls in line with the day after I get paid. So I know that all my bills are paid and what I'm left with is mine. And you mentioned before, Bruce, about having those fixed expenses versus the variable ones. If you do have spare cash left over at the end of the week or the month, and you do go out for dinner and you still got money in your account, I like to start again. So I then transfer anything left over into a savings account and I start again. I don't let it build up in that account because I get excited and start booking holidays. So I think that can be a great tip for people as well. What banks don't like to see are when you do come in to borrow money and you say to us, well, we can cut down on how much food we buy. Banks don't want to see that. They don't want to see that you're struggling to enjoy your life to be able to afford a payment for a personal loan, for example. So although you may think, well, I'm quite happy to cut down my food bill, it may not be something that the bank agree with. If you're looking to cut down your McDonald's bill, then maybe that is something that you can look to cut down on.
Yes. All right. And so it becomes a personal choice on things like alcohol or clothing or shoes or food, Vicky, or, dining out, etc.
Exactly. And one of the big things that I see when doing a home loan application, we always ask everybody to do a declared living expenses, which is just another fancy phrase for a budget. And what I do see are people leaving out things such as expenses for Christmas and birthdays because they say, oh, well, I don't buy clothes very often or, we don't really do much for birthdays. But it all adds up, Bruce. I mean, a cup of coffee these days is $5. If you're having one of those a day, that's a lot of money each month.
Yeah, there you go. So some banks or many banks perhaps have separate accounts for Christmas, Christmas accounts and holiday accounts and things like that too, Vicky. And do you find that these are helpful for some people?
The girls at the bank all laugh at me because I've still got my old passbook Christmas club savings account that pays absolutely no interest, but I put $150 a month into that so that at the end of the year, Christmas isn't a problem for me.
There you go. So that really is planning. That's budget planning, Vicky.
And banks make it so that you can access that money in an emergency as well. You know, we're not we're not hard with things like that. If it does get to October and you are struggling or you're wanting to purchase something early, you can always go into your bank and talk to them about that. But it's just it makes it that little bit harder to access that money.
So let's take a worst case scenario. We'll go back to our $1,000 a week budget, and we've done our budgeting, Ingrid, and we've got all the, we've added it all up, and unfortunately, it comes to all our expenses, our budgeted expenses come to $1,100 a week, or we find after a month actually we're overspending what we had budgeted for. Either one of those scenarios, what are we going to do? Apart from go and get a second job or something like that.
Look, like Vicky said, if you take it each week, if your expenses haven't been that much, you've got some left over, put it aside for the weeks that you are a bit short, because they do happen. Things come up.
Yeah, car registration comes up every quarter and sometimes sneaks up on us.
Forgot about the kids' excursion that needs to be paid or something like that. Things do pop up, of course.
Yes.
But just having that little buffer when you've got it is really helpful.
Yep, no, that's terrific. And if you missed our program last week, we did talk about financial hardship and ways of getting support, getting assistance with that. Have a listen to our podcast, or you can talk to Economic Justice Australia or one of the welfare rights centres. Just have a search for them and you'll find that they are absolutely amazing in terms of giving advice and support.
One handy thing to help with a budget is the online banking. They have a great filter where you can actually have a look at where you are actually spending your money.
Okay.
You can filter it down, or have I spent too much at Kmart this month? You can actually type in Kmart, it would bring up all your Kmart purchases. Things like, it helps you filter out where you spend at supermarkets, what you spend at, clothing stores. It really helps you break it all down. And to see it all on paper, it can be quite a shock to actually calculate how much you do spend a year on the things that you might not necessarily need. And they're the things that you can cut back on if things are getting tight.
Terrific, terrific. Before we go to our next song, just a thought on automatic debits and, like automatic payments from accounts for bills that continue, are regular. What are your thoughts about that, either of you? I know we're not allowed to give financial advice on this program, but just your thought about, is that a useful thing to set up an automatic payment if it's a commitment?
Absolutely. Things like phone bills, regular payments to be debited out of your account on a regular basis can be really helpful. Like Vicky said, tee it up so it comes in, comes out of your account the day after your pay comes in, so then you know it's all accounted for. One thing that people need to be aware of is the difference between a direct debit and setting up a regular payment on your card. They're different. Mm-hmm. So a direct debit comes directly out from your bank account number with your BSB account number, and you've given that company authority to direct debit from your account. If you just give someone your card number and you say, yep, take it out monthly or weekly, whatever, if you lose your card and order a new one, you then need to update your details with that company with your new card details.
So a few traps there, potential traps.
Yeah, absolutely. And having it on your card can, if your card is then compromised by a company or you have issues with the company, we have no choice but to cancel a card and order a new one, which then causes issues for companies that are doing the right thing and you have to provide the details all over again. So direct debits are good and have their place, yeah.
Vicky, a final thought on that, and we'll go to we'll have a listen to the Beatles in a minute. How's that?
Love the Beatles. Ingrid's exactly right with everything she said, and direct debits are wonderful, but you still have to keep track on them, Ruth. So, for example, a fixed payment each month, such as a Netflix subscription, that you know how much it's going to be, is great. However, if you've got something like a gas bill that fluctuates, a direct debit might not be ideal because they take the money on their set date, and the amount could be blow your budget.
Right. So in winter, for example, the account could be twice as much as a summer account.
Exactly right. So in examples like that, it might be better where you control when you make that payment. And, I know some companies allow you to pay a bit before and a bit after. So it completely depends on who the company is and whether or not the bill fluctuates as to whether I'd recommend a direct debit or not.
Fantastic. And you're listening to Ingrid and Vicky, and can I just underscore, we're not about to give financial advice on this program, so you please get your own advice and talk to those people who you trust. We're going to have the Beatles now with none other than Money.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And you've been listening to Community Conversations, our regular Thursday morning program here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. We've been going for 6 years today, Cora and I. A wonderful celebration, Cora, afterwards, I'm sure. And don't forget, Monday is International Women's Day, so plan ahead, do something special, and of course, as you've just heard, make sure you sign in to the listeners survey here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1 on our website. We want to hear from you in the next 2 weeks to help us plan to be an even better community radio station. We've been talking all things financial the last 4 weeks, and we've just been talking about budgets, and Ingrid, following on from budget, of course, part of budget is we have to pay tax and so on. And I know we're not about to give tax advice here on the radio or anything like that. But there are tax considerations in budgets, aren't there? And with COVID and working from home and all of these things, there are things, aren't there,
Absolutely.
That we can claim on our tax and so on?
Yeah, sure. One thing for some sole traders or self-employed people, if you don't budget and take into account your tax obligations and GST, you can get in a lot of strife at each best time at the end of the quarter when you have a bill and you haven't budgeted for that. So keeping things separate that way,
yes,
are great as well.
Yes.
If you are fortunate enough to have a interest earning account, have some funds away that is earning interest, it's optional to supply tax file numbers to your bank, but if you don't supply a tax file number, the government can...
And does, I think.
Yeah, withholding tax on the interest that you do earn. So, and then you have to claim it back for the following year.
So make sure you supply your tax file number. Yeah, that's a great suggestion, Ingrid. Terrific. Listeners, we're almost out of time. So in the 3 minutes we have left, Vicky, we're going to do the impossible. We're going to quickly summarise the whole 4 weeks that we've just done. So let's go to week one, week two, week three, week four. We started off talking about online banking and scams and frauds. And what were the key messages there, Vicky?
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot. That was 3 weeks ago.
Bruce. It was.
No, that was a really good session. And for me, the main part of it was don't let us scare you. We're not saying that these things happen all the time, but you do need to be aware that not everything is as it seems. And look out for these things. If you're not sure, don't do it. That's my tip. Go into your local bank, talk to them about something if you're concerned that it might be a scam. If you have seen fraud on your accounts, go straight into the bank and talk to somebody about it, and don't be embarrassed.
There you go. Second week we talked about elder abuse and financial bullying, and sadly people are in those situations. And again, Vicky, if we know someone, or perhaps we ourselves are in a position of being bullied by someone, your thoughts about that?
Again, there's always somebody to talk to, and going into your local bank and asking to speak to somebody in private about that is absolutely fine. Just remember that a family member or somebody that you know may not have always been somebody who would have been a financial bully, but could have had circumstances in their life that has pushed them in that direction. So, you know, we talked about gambling, we talked about drugs and alcohol and how these things can fuel issues like that. So if you are suspecting that it's happening to somebody that you know, please speak up.
Terrific. And then the third week we talked about financial hardship, and I gave you the advice line for Welfare Rights Centre, which I'll give you one more time, which is 0419 793 652. And that's the local Welfare Rights Centre here in Victoria. And they're about helping you with any Centrelink challenges, legal advice. It's all free, wonderful support from them there. And then today, Vicky and Ingrid, well, we've brought it all together. Hopefully we've whipped people's appetites about the importance of budgets and so on.
We've talked quite a lot of the negative sides of banking over the last 4 weeks and the things that people may need help with. There's some really, really good parts too. You know, house prices may be up there at the moment, but rates are at an all-time low. So now might be the perfect time for you to go into the bank and talk about an investment property, or talk about what you can do next and where your life plan is. So, again, I think that the review of this week is exactly the same. It's talk to somebody. That's what we're here for. That's what we get paid to do, and we're here for you.
And on that note, we are out of time. Ingrid, Vicky, thank you so much, and to your team, Vicky, over the last 3 weeks. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've learned a lot. I hope our listeners have. I'm sure they have. Thanks for being a part of the program, and wish you well with your future plans there, Vicky, as well.
Oh, thanks very much. Lovely to work with you, Bruce and Cora. Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, we'll be back same time next week for a program. I haven't got a guest yet, so perhaps you're a listener out there who has a story to tell, has a group that you're involved with that has not yet been on radio. We'd love to hear from you, so please be in touch.